announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Filthy FRB Show. It is Friday night, October 16th, and as always, I'm joined by Filthy Tom Lawler, who is now someone's father. How fucking scary is that?
It's immensely scary. I'm glad that you paused there. Did you forget who was on the other line? Were you thinking it was somebody else? Was it Clemson Tom?
It was one of those pauses. I wanted to say something, you know, kind of interesting about you becoming a father, and it didn't come to me. So
yeah,
I paused. But if you didn't say anything, it could have been one of those dramatic pauses, and it could have just all been part of the show, but you ruined that.
I blew it. Damn it.
So, I mean, I got to ask you the obligatory questions. How does it feel, man, this whole father gimmick?
Well, we haven't done the paternity test yet, so.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy, you know. There's really nothing I can say to describe it. It's just wild knowing that you had a small part in making this little human being and that it carries some of your DNA and some of your features. But, you know, people have been having babies for thousands and thousands of years, and it's going to continue on. But, you know, to me, this one's special.
This one's special.
Yeah.
So have your parents seen little Finn yet, or?
No, my parents have not. They're still on the East Coast. But my girlfriend's mother's here. We're planning on going back to the East Coast for Christmas, for the holidays. So that will be the introduction of Findre to my family.
Now, some people ask me if his name was influenced by Finn Balor. Was it at all, or you just like that name?
No, I didn't even pick the name. My girlfriend did, and after she picked it, I said, look, I need to I need to warn you that there's a guy in WWE, in NXT, and he's going to be a big star. And a lot of people are going to know his name, and his name's Finn. And it's Finn Balor, okay, which is close enough to my last name. But, hey, she was okay with it, and I was more than okay with it because Finn Balor is pretty badass. If it would have been like if she would have said, like, can we name him Bull Dempsey Lawler or, you know, something along those lines, Rhino, I would have been like, eh. But Finn Balor's a pretty good-looking guy. He's in great shape, and he's the champ. And, you know, Finn Andre Lawler is going to be the champ, too, one day. So
what was the inspiration for the middle name?
It's her father's name.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what is it, 2015? So 2040, we can expect to see Finn in the middleweight or light heavyweight division of the UFC?
Well, I mean, you know, he could make it in there and, at 19 years old, like Sage Northcutt.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. Let's go into that a little bit, because I was on a podcast yesterday or the day before with Crooklyn, Steffi Daniels, and she asked me about Sage Northcutt, I think is his name. I keep calling him Northlake, which I legitimately didn't know his name for a while. Wasn't trying to make fun of him. And I thought that maybe getting into the UFC at age 19 is a little too much too soon. And I think the tested formula is go to college for 4 or 5 years, redshirt a year, wrestle, and then leave and learn the striking, learn jiu-jitsu. Is jumping into the most competitive mixed martial arts league in the world at age 19 – Is he gonna be a flash in the pan? Is that good for his development?
Well, I mean, there's no tone at this point. I kind of liken this to like a situation with like a Kobe Bryant or LeBron James. You know, those guys that come straight out of high school and would enter the NBA. Kind of similar. You know, he's getting hot shotted into the big leagues, but you know, as his first performance showed, you know, the guy's got phenomenal skills. He's got a tremendous upside, a huge ceiling, and it appears that he's doing a lot of training now with TriStar MMA. And to no one's surprise, you know, obviously the home of such luminaries as former welterweight champion George St. Pierre, former title challenger Rory McDonald, and you know, speaking of those two guys, they kind of laid out somewhat of a blueprint for developing a young fighter with Rory and then pushing him towards the top while another fighter kind of occupies that spot. So it seems like perhaps, you know, especially with Sage being so young at 19 years old, and he's pretty big size for a 155er, that, you know, maybe perhaps he'll be the heir to Rory McDonald's throne in the future as far as TriStar is concerned. The guy's been training since he was 5 years old, apparently. So
yeah,
it's tough to say that this is too early after 14 years of training. And I mean, the guy's 1-0 in the UFC, and he's a guy that
he starts
pushed a ref, tested positive, and got his ass kicked in a minute, but
and didn't make weight. So he got the trifecta there, didn't make weight, pushed the referee and got popped for marijuana. I think he was barely over the threshold, like maybe it was like 56, and the limit in Texas is 50.
Yeah,
which is interesting because usually anything goes in Texas, but their threshold is 50. Nevada is 150.
Yeah, and remember, I mean, that's where Jessica I failed, and she was at like 17. So they used to be at 15 not even too long ago, and then they bumped it up to 50. I don't know why they didn't follow the lead of a lot of other states and WADA or USADA and go with 150. I don't understand it. I think there needs to be some sort of consistency across the board when it comes to those sort of things, because I tried to look up some of the rules for Illinois because that's where I was previously fighting, and I couldn't find a damn thing about their bylaws and mixed martial arts and what they test for, what they don't test for, what their policies are. So there's a lot of gray area out there, and there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to those sort of things. And, this is just another instance where not everything falls in line, and this guy got popped. Whatever. It's his own fault. He's probably going to get cut, since UFC apparently is cutting a bunch of people anyways. And the big star of that fight was Sage Northcutt. So.
Yeah, and you talk about those cuts, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. And I saw some of the guys on Twitter that were reacting to it. One of the guys, Van Buren, kind of had an interesting experience, but I'll save that for a little bit later.
Martin?
Yeah, Martin Van Buren.
Okay.
Yeah, it kind of seems like he got screwed out of it, but let's save that for later. But wanted to talk, I know there's been, people have talked about this to death, the TJ Dillashaw, Uriah Faber situation with Team Alpha Male. But I think, Tom, you have a unique perspective as somebody who actually fights for a living and has to coexist with training partners in the gym. And I wanted to get your take on it. And I'm sure everybody knows, but TJ Dillashaw accepted a deal to go to Denver to train at the Muscle Farm facility for the Elevation Fight Team, which is not a new team. It's like this guy, Leister Bowling, Elliot Marshall, Christian Allen, who's a striking coach, and then they have a strength and conditioning coach. So this is no fly by night. These guys are good coaches, and I was told he's getting $5,000 a month to train there and represent Muscle Farm, and they're also paying his living expenses, giving him a home and a vehicle, possibly a vehicle for his wife too. So what are your thoughts on this whole controversy, Tom?
Well, as far as, the personal relationships and that sort of thing goes, I think that's a very individual thing, because I know just from my own, point of view, let's say I'll use Vinny Magalhaes as an example, right?
Yeah.
I consider Vinny a good friend of mine. He may think I'm a piece of shit. I have no idea. But I consider him a good friend and, a great training partner. We've known each other for years. And, if we were both in the same promotion – and, they want us to fight for the title, it's not going to happen, okay? If Vinny left the gym I was at and he was no longer training, we were no longer training partners, even if the guy went and talked a bunch of shit about me, the fight's probably still not going to happen. I understand that it is a business, it is a sport, but to a certain degree, a lot of it boils down to your motivation when you're in that cage. And I think it's just very, very hard for two people such as Uriah Faber and TJ Dillashaw, who probably share very similar common goals And for a long time, Uriah was, you know, he was a backer for TJ. He helped him out and get started. And, you know, I'm not on the inside of this deal. I don't know exactly what's going on. But you certainly have to give Uriah Faber some credit for all the work that he's done with these Team Alpha Male guys and developing that team. Now, that being said, getting $5,000 a month and free living expenses, that is that's a big deal, especially when we are in a sport that your longevity is not guaranteed. You know, there's nothing guaranteed past your next fight in a lot of ways. You could get injured in training and never fight again. So I think, you know, as far as financially and personally, I don't think that TJ Dillashaw did anything wrong. However, you know, it seems like he's trying to kind of play both sides of the coin. And he was saying that he wanted to continue training at Team Alpha Male, but he's also going to keep training at Team Elevation. And there's just too many conflicts of interest there if you're going to try to do that on a full-time basis, especially when all of the top contenders or a lot of the top contenders around that weight class and those weight classes are your teammates and they're going to be looking to get a title shot. I think that out of all the people I've seen talk about this, I think Cody Garbrandt probably had some of the best quotes and best things to say about it, because he basically said, look, you know, like, he likes Dillashaw, whatever, they're training partners, but he wanted to be the UFC champion a long time before he knew anything about TJ Dillashaw. So, you know, for a lot of those fighters, I'm sure that despite the fact that they train with him, you know, that's the goal, that's what they're looking to achieve. So they'll have no problem fighting each other. I don't know if Uriah and him will ever fight. The stars would have to align. I mean, Dillashaw would have to beat Cruz. Faber would have to, defeat Saenz, which is not out of the realm of possibility, of course. He probably will win that fight.
Right.
But I'm not so sure that Dillashaw gets past Cruz. Now, if Dillashaw loses to Cruz, you could easily set up a Dillashaw-Faber fight. And it seems like those two, as far as the title's concerned, if the title's in play, then they have no qualms about fighting each other. So we'll see how that goes in the future. But to me, the most interesting thing about this is the opportunities and possibilities it opens up for other companies to do something very similar. With the way that Reebok has come in and taken out a large chunk of the sponsorship money that was going to fighters, this seems like it could be a new avenue for these companies to get their name and image out there. Obviously, I don't think the UFC commentators are going to say, well, I don't know. I would assume that they would mention Muscle Farm if it was Team Muscle Farm, although this is Team Elevation. So, you know, perhaps they'll shy away from even mentioning the Muscle Farm training facility, and they won't mention it at all, but I would think that this opens a lot of possibilities for other companies to do the same thing, whether it's supplement companies, whether it's, you know, clothing or gear companies or whatever the case may be.
Now, if I'm Dillashaw, the thing that I would be concerned about, I think Dillashaw told Ariel Helwani that it's a one-year deal. A lot of these teams where basically they pay you to come train, I don't think it's a very sustainable business model. And I know, like Black Zillions, for instance, you know, they've recently lost Vitor Belfort, and there's talk about Rashad Evans also leaving. So TJ's in a precarious condition spot here. What if this doesn't work out? Where does he go? You know, where can he go? And will that affect his development as a fighter?
Well, I mean, I think as far as TJ Dillashaw goes, regardless of the Team Elevation situation, there's plenty of great fighters and good training partners in the state of Colorado and around the Denver area. So I'm not sure that this one-year contract would, you know, necessarily force him to, like, leave if it ended. Perhaps it would. You know, there's no telling. But yeah, like I said, there's no shortage of good guys in Colorado. You have Neil Magny, I think, is maybe part of that team. Drew Dober. So there's always going to be places and people that you can train with. Also, Dwayne Ludwig is not on the coaching staff for that team, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously he would still have Dwayne that he could train with. And it seems like a lot of the credit that's been given to TJ's development has been given to Dwayne as well. So I'm sure that they would continue their you know, relationship, regardless of what happens in the future. You know, a 1 year deal, you know, five grand a month sounds good on the surface, but you know, that's $60,000 a year. And if he starts losing fights because of the training situation, you know, he could be losing out on a lot more money than that $60,000 that he recouped in training costs and living expenses. So, you know, there's no telling what could happen here. And with a fight against Dominic Cruz coming up, you know, there's no guarantee that he's going to win. This isn't the who do you fight, Joe Soto? This isn't a Joe Soto that he's fighting. This is you know, a former champion who, in his last fight, coming off of a 2 year layoff, destroyed a very formidable opponent with Takeya Mitsugaki. So,
you know, in Faber's defense, you know, I think he's kind of been portrayed a little bit as a bad guy in this. I know for a fact he did turn down a fight with Dillashaw because he was friends with him at that pay-per-view when he did fight, when TJ did fight Soto. I mean, UFC wanted those guys to fight. And Faber said, you know, unless it's like life-changing type money, that's, you know, that life-changing type money for both of us, it's not something I'm interested in. And then there was, Faber claims there was another instance. I just know of that one for sure. And then I don't exactly know when the other, when he turned that down. One of the criticisms that Dillashaw expressed about Team Alpha Male was the absence of a head coach. He said he was basically coaching himself. And
that's interesting, because haven't they had head coaches that entire time? I mean, wasn't Dwayne Ludwig brought in to be the head coach? Isn't Martin Kampman? I mean, he may be gone by now, but he was the head coach. Well, now they brought in Rick Rufus.
I think Dillashaw's point was they can't keep a head coach because they always end up fighting with Faber over money.
Well,
you know, yeah, and Rick Rufus is out there. I don't know if that's a permanent thing, but I know he at least went out there for an exploratory time to see if there's a fit there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, from what I read, you know, the reason for Martin Kampman leaving it wasn't over money, but I could be, you know, I could be way off on that.
Yeah.
The Sacramento sucks is the gist of what I got from, you know, from reading that about him leaving. So,
yeah. And, you know, I mean, for a lot of people, they might not have known this, but Uriah Faber is a partner in a management firm called MMA Inc. They also represent Chael Sonnen and formerly Mark Munoz, formerly Joseph Benavidez, and also formerly TJ Dillashaw. So TJ fired them 7 or 8 months ago. And if you train a Team Alpha Male, basically, I mean, I don't know if you're forced, but it's highly encouraged that you're represented by this company called MMA Inc., which Faber is a part owner of. So Faber owns the gym, he owns the management company, and he rents out space for these guys to live. So, you know, he's got like this, you know, what they would call in the entertainment industry as this 360 deal. So Dillashaw fired the management firm 6 or 7 months ago. So when I saw that,
yeah, so you got it down to like would have been like a 240 deal.
Well, yeah, you're better at math than me about that. But when I heard that happened, I was like, yeah. And then factor in the Bang Ludwig situation, you know, I was like, he's not going to be there too long. And you know, Joseph Benavidez also fired that management firm. He got married last weekend. You know, his wife, Megan, is based in Las Vegas. So I don't know. I'm not saying that Alpha Male has fallen apart. Obviously not. But I think it's a fair thing to say that one of the reasons why Faber has come out in the public so much and, you know, has seemed a bit of a jilted person in this equation is I don't think anybody of consequence has ever left Alpha Male. This is the first time anybody's actually, you know, left, unless I'm forgetting somebody.
Yeah, I'm trying to rack my brain in there. Yeah, you know, there's been some situations like – I think Mark Munoz was training there early on, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right, and
but obviously,
and that's how Mark got hooked up with Uriah's management company.
So I mean, I don't know if you consider him leaving and starting his own place actually leaving, or what the case is. You know, he's pretty highly sought after in the wrestling community. So
I know Brian Caraway and Misha left, but that seemed to be Uriah wanted them gone.
Yeah,
you know. You know, so that's the Dillashaw situation. It's tough to really say.
Hey,
you know,
but once again, Mac the Mystic called it, right?
Oh, Conor McGregor. He's claiming. Yeah, he said he was a snake in the grass. But I mean, McGregor's no idiot. I mean, he knew what I knew, you know, 7 or 8 months ago. You know, when you fire the management company that Faber is a third partner of. Or maybe even more. There's three partners. So I don't know if he has more of a stake than the two other guys. So basically, Dillashaw already fired him in one aspect. You know, so I think the writing was on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's been a volatile situation from some standpoint, because both guys are at the top of the division. And, you know, no matter what you say, there's a lot of money out there to be a title holder. So you've got to think that Uriah Faber, you know, wants that for himself. Obviously he wants the title again, no doubt about it. So been a strange situation all the way through, and it's no doubt interesting now. And honestly, I kind of hope it leads to some fights between them, because I think it would do a lot to bolster that 135 division. You know, this Cruz fight could push it in, you know, a few different ways where it goes. But I think eventually, if we see a Faber Dillashaw fight, it'll be buys. It'll do good on
a Brian Alvarez. To steal a Brian Alvarezism, yeah, buys. I mean, this is the most anybody's ever talked about the 135-pound division, maybe ever. I mean, this could be the best thing to ever happen. This little feud. We've been
doing it for like 10 or 15 minutes, and I think that's the most anybody's ever talked about
it. Yeah, honestly, because Dillashaw doesn't even fight on pay-per-view. His last fight was Fox, and his next fight is Fox Sports 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If he fights Faber, I guarantee you that's on a pay-per-view. You know, either in Sacramento or I think Las Vegas, you know, he could draw a crowd. It won't be like Moose Johnson, who, you know, they released the ticket sales for that pay-per-view, and it was a touch under 5,000 paid.
Wow.
Which,
any clue on the buy rate?
I think Dave said like between 115 and 135, which is basically the baseline. You know, they could put me in there against some random fan.
I bet you'd get more than that. A lot of people want to see you get your ass kicked.
Yeah, Ian McCall. Maybe we could do it, Ian McCall. You know, and I'm not going to set my price really high. You know, one of those things is like send a grandstand challenge, so he'll never accept. I would do it. Give me $25,000. You know, so I can get in shape and pay for all that stuff. But I need a piece of the pay per view. So I don't, you know, I'm not asking for a crazy deal, because he says he wants to hurt me, you know. So maybe we can work something out.
Yeah, might as well get paid.
Yeah, do it. Yeah.
Although if he does beat your ass outside of the octagon, you may get more money than $25,000.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, he's broke, but you know, he's a rich OC boy, you know, who used his parents' money to party throughout most of his life. So possibly.
I don't know anything about it, so I'm not going to comment on this situation. I prefer to be left out of this if at all costs.
Yeah, I understand, Tom. Yeah.
Kids, man.
Great. Yeah. So I guess we've said enough about Dillashaw and Faber. The other thing that's I think Ronda Rousey's mom is got to be the most entertaining promo in. She's probably second best behind Paul Heyman. if you want to talk about people cutting promos right now.
You think so? Gato is pretty good.
Well, I don't speak Japanese, but so I don't know. But Ronda Rousey's mom, Anne Maria, Dr. DeMars, I mean, she just went nuclear on Edvin Tar, whatever his name is.
Tarvidian
is who is Ronda's head coach. Did you have an opportunity to see the videos, Tom?
I didn't see the videos, but I read the transcripts of them. I don't have the time to sit there and listen to somebody talk for 5 or 10 minutes, Brian.
Well, you watch every wrestling and MMA program known to man. What do you mean you don't have time?
Speaking of which, I was planning on watching the CMLL show tonight, but apparently it's not being broadcast, so that kind of screwed up my Friday plans, my big, exciting Friday plans.
So what were your impressions of the transcript from Dr. DeMars, a.k.a. Ronda's mom?
Well, I mean, a little bit overboard, I guess, but she said what everybody wants to say but doesn't, you know? Everything that everybody thinks, everybody looks at the fighters that have gone and trained with Edward after, you know, Ronda's success. And these guys have not been performing to, you know, the standard that they had set before. And it's unfortunate because Travis Brown is a guy that very close to fighting for the title. And in my opinion, I think the UFC wanted him to fight for the title. And that is kind of out the window now. And, you know, his recent loss to Andrei Arlovsky, to me, you know, he didn't look very polished in his stand-up, and that's what cost him the fight. Same thing, Jake Ellenberger, unfortunately, has not, you know, looked like he did in the past since he's been training with Edward. So, you know, he's done great work with Ronda. You can't discount the fact – I mean, she's a killer. We don't know what she'd be like if she was at other gyms, but we have to assume that based on her performances, this is, you know, somewhat of a good fit for her. But obviously her mom does not believe that.
Are you calling him Edward as kind of a joke? What's his name? I thought it was Edmund.
Edmund.
Oh, I thought you were doing a little joke like I do.
No. I just forgot because, quite frankly, it doesn't affect me in a personal level. So
yeah. Well, just to give people an idea. So basically, Ronda's mom thinks that Edmund uses Ronda to lure other people into the gym, which, you know, probably makes sense. So those people come into the gym and then they all leave. Like the other Ronda's friends, Duke and Marina, whatever, and
Anna Schiffer.
Yeah, she does. That's another person who doesn't like me. She cut a promo on me too. But I've learned with age, you don't argue too much with women. So I'm not even going to try to offer a counterpoint to Marina. But
are there any female fighters that like you? That would be the real question.
Well, I don't know if she likes me, but Jessica, I agreed to come on the podcast. But I don't know if she liked being on the podcast. Maybe she just came on to talk to you. I have no idea.
I don't think so.
But my point with that, so Ronda's mom thinks that he uses Ronda to lure these other people in, and what, then inevitably,
smart business, by the way, but.
Well, yeah, it kind of is smart business. But then they leave just as quickly. You know, they're gone. All of Ronda's friends are over at Josh Barnett's now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, Shayna Baszler was there, you know, for a long time before that. And Josh Barnett's always had, it seems like he's always kind of been at the forefront of women's mixed martial arts, you know, kind of been an advocate for it. So, you know, after hearing the stories of Edmund basically not talking to females and bad-mouthing them, I guess kind of what it boils down to, and actually Carol Parisian, I was reading an interview with him from a year ago, talking about this same situation is, you know, Ronda grew up around Armenian people. Okay. And, perhaps she has grown accustomed to the way, their nuances and their customs, and it doesn't bother her as much, but these other females that came in there, you know, if it's a, very, what would it be? Patriarchal society and, you know, kind of focused on the man being dominant, That could definitely rub. I could definitely see that rubbing Shayna Baszler the wrong way.
I read that same one. I think it was on the Underground. It was one of the top 10 or 15 threads. And yeah, basically, Carlos said that they treated Ronda, you know, worse than any guy, and she was just tough enough that she could put up with it. And I don't know the particulars, because reading a Carl interview, it's like it's partially in English, even though the guy speaks perfect English. It's difficult to get the context, you know, between
because in that same interview, he was making jokes.
He made a joke about a tampon. I didn't know if he was serious. I don't know.
Yeah, he said Manny Gambieran's holding her panties and tampons, but then he said it was joking. So, you know, I don't know the personal situation between all those people, but clearly Dr. Anne-Marie DeMars is not a fan of Edmund. She claims she'd run him over, right?
Yeah, if there wasn't a law against it. And, you know, let's remember, I mean,
let's talk about that. Yeah. That's pretty fucking hardcore. You probably shouldn't be saying stuff like that.
Yeah, and she says that she hates him and he's a terrible or awful person. And let's remember, Dr. DeMars, this is not like, you know, a lot of people have like crazy parents, right? Dr. DeMars, she has a fucking, she got her PhD while she was, you know, winning world championships in judo. I mean, this is a very sophisticated, intelligent woman.
Brian, do you know what her PhD is in?
I could tell you, it's something. What is it? Do you know?
No, I have no clue.
Let's see. I know
she's like Dr. Kevorkian, because she's a killer, stone cold killer.
Let's see. So she went to Washington University in St. Louis undergrad, which is very difficult to get into. Then got an MBA at the University of Minnesota, and her PhD is at UC Riverside. And what is that PhD in? Okay, that is in educational psychology.
All right. So she's, yeah, hey, I have an education degree as well. So me and Dr. Anne-Marie DeMars are like on the same page, right? Same plane.
Well, I don't know about that, Todd. She's got a PhD. You have a BA? Well, me
too. I got a PhD too. pretty huge dick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to ask the girlfriend about that. Yeah.
That's actually like the furthest thing from the truth. So.
Right. But I thought it was interesting because they actually posted that entire interview, because the thing about Edmund, that was just little clips of Dr. DeMars talking about Edmund. They put the whole interview up there, and some of the takeaways that I heard her talk about, she said Ronda is loyal to a fault, and she worries about Ronda every day, and which is interesting, because, you know, she doesn't seem to be like a problem child. You know, she's not like the next guy on our topic list, Mayhem Miller. But I think one of the things, you know, I can't pretend to know exactly what set her off, but Dr. DeMars explained that when Ronda was growing up, she would bring her to many gyms to learn from many different people, all kinds of different techniques. And she thinks it's terrible. That was the word she used, terrible, that she only works out at one gym. That was one of her criticisms. But obviously, I think this cuts a lot deeper than, you know, not diversifying her training.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because, you know, there's plenty of MMA fighters who do all their training at one gym, and it doesn't affect them adversely. But, you know, I think it's a personal issue.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a personal issue.
You think I would run him over with my car if there wasn't a law against it? I mean,
what kind of car does she drive? That's another good question. Because if it's like a, you know, a little piece of shit like rice burner, then perhaps, you know, she doesn't want to do that much damage. But if she's like driving a Lincoln Navigator or something, Oh, man. Edmonds in trouble.
But, you know, I even put this on Twitter. I really think Bellator should hire Dr. DeMars as the promoter, as the public face. I think Scott Coker is a sharp business guy. Just he's not very charismatic. You put Dr. Anne Maria DeMars there as the front person cutting these scathing promos. She's like Dana, but like she's actually like really intelligent. I mean, she would tear people apart.
Well, what about perhaps like a segment kind of like those old IFL Don Fry segments where you could ask her questions and you know, she would answer in her own you know, majestic way.
Yeah, there's an idea. Yeah. You know, so you know that's enough about Ronda's mom. She's one of the best promos, and I think she's earned the right to give her opinion. She's Ronda's mom, and she's a fucking badass, a world champion, first American female to win a world championship in judo in the early 80s. But you know, just to transition a little bit to what's going on in Japan, the Ryzen Fighting Federation, Mr. Saki Kabara's new venture, and this—it's very interesting, Tom. They, of course, the top guy that they signed is Fedor Emelianenko, and then Ariel Helwani reported that Fedor was going to fight this Indian kickboxer Jaideep Singh, or I don't even know how you say it, really.
That's right, Jaideep Singh.
Jaideep Singh.
To his credit, has defeated Sergei Karatanov in a K-1 bout, and I'm sure you're going to get to this, but it appears that he is not going to be fighting Fedor because he has been booked in the deep megaton world heavyweight, whatever it is. I think it's an open weight title, actually, an open weight title match. So I think that either the idea is you have him win this title, and then you can kind of legitimize him a little bit. And you know, kind of push him as I believe there's some sort of he has some tie-in with Japan as well. I don't know if he's ethnically Japanese of some sort. Or
yeah,
something.
Somebody told me he's quite popular in Japan. And that fight that you were talking about for Deep, it's tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is so I don't know. I mean, Ariel gets good information. So if Ariel was off on, I guarantee you, when Ariel reported it, it was 100% true. Now, when the storm, the backlash of like, you're having Fedor fight who?
Yeah. So Jaideep Singh is, he's lived in Japan since the age of 3. So he was born in India, but he resides in Japan. So there you go. So that's why he would be, you know, more popular in Japan, you know.
Yeah, so I guess that makes sense. But, I mean, this is a guy who lost an MMA bout to some bum in the Super Fight League. And if you're Spike TV and you throw your weight behind Saki Kabara, you say you're a promotional partner of Saki Kabara, how do you justify putting that fight on TV? I mean, to me, that's that, – and I like what Spike is doing. I'm a fan of Bellator. And to me, that it just speaks so poorly of Spike to televise that type of fight.
Yeah. Well. Okay. So you actually have you had the result of that fight wrong. He won that fight. So
oh, did he? Yeah, okay.
He's 1-0, TKO, elbow stoppage in 4 minutes, 24 seconds of the first round.
But he's lost. He's lost his last 3 or 4 kickboxing fights, though.
Right.
Am I right on that? Okay.
Yep. I believe that's correct.
Yes. I mean, so to me, I was expecting like, okay, you know, maybe check Congo. I mean, I know Bellator doesn't want to send assets over there that they can use for their tentpole events here in the States. But I mean, what would be the harm if you lent them check Congo or somebody that's like has some sort of resume?
Yeah, and then I've seen that Sean Jordan was also, you know, lobbying for the fight because apparently his contract with the UFC expired, and he said he'd like to test the waters there. And I mean, he was very open about it. He said, like, look, I want to fight Fedor because it's going to be life-changing money. It's like, hey, this guy's a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting, you know, just as an aside here, that he decided to fight out his contract, because that is extremely rare in the UFC.
Yes, yes. I mean, he was. I think it was very clear in the interview that I read that he was looking to test the market. And, I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of these things. He did not look good in that last fight. Let's be honest. He looked terrible.
Yeah. I don't know if you were on the line during the podcast when we were doing it live, but, you know, I, of course, was drinking quite a bit. So I made some comments about his weight that were kind of overboard. But I still think he didn't look in the best shape that he's ever been.
Oh, come on, Brian. He's looked progressively more out of shape in his last few fights. And it's unfortunate because the guy is clearly a very good athlete.
My criticism was legitimate then?
Yeah, I mean, he's looked physically worse over the past, you know, I would say 5 or 6 fights. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's not – if he heard this and got mad at you – he should be more mad at himself, you know? And his performance wasn't great in that last fight. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of these things like the UFC is going to, you know, offer him lower money than he was making. And to him, it may not be worth it. He didn't look too motivated to me. So perhaps he was just looking to fight out that contract and look for, other opportunities in the fight game. Or, you know, I don't know, maybe his head's not just in it. I'm not exactly sure what the deal is. But regardless, I mean, he has offered to fight Fedor. And if you're going to sign, I mean, it's way better than Jaideep Singh. I'll just say that, you know. I have no problem with seeing Sean Jordan versus Fedor. Because realistically, if Fedor came in the UFC, like in the past, okay, we had Krokop coming in and he fought. Shit, I don't even remember who he fought.
Eddie Sanchez
in his first fight, right? So it's not out of the realm of possibility that Fedor could have come into the UFC and, well, he would have fought Sean Jordan anyways, you know?
Which would have been fine, because just seeing Fedor in the octagon would have been – that's just cool within itself after all this time.
Yeah.
And I totally agree about Sean Jordan. It was so weird because I think his idea of fighting out his contract – because I think that he had maybe 1-2 in a row coming into that last fight.
I believe so, because he had that ridiculous super kick.
Right, the Shawn Michaels super kick. And then if he would have won this bout, okay, now you got some capital. Now you can go talk to Bellator and say, hey, you know, I'm a well-known UFC heavyweight. And, how about giving me a nice raise and maybe a signing bonus and, you know, putting some promotional muscle behind me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't understand that because, you know, I saw him and I was just like, wow, he's really out of shape, especially for somebody – I don't know if people know his background, but he was a fullback on the national championship team for LSU for Coach Nick Saban, who is, in my opinion, the best coach in all of sports, not named Mike Krzyzewski. I should have just called him Coach K. I mean, so the guy was a legit athlete.
Well – but he also got busted for steroids in college.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the only reason he was able to bench press like 600 pounds. He holds the record at LSU for bench press. It was definitely aided.
But he's got the body type for it. He's got a, you know, he doesn't have long arms. He's got a huge chest. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that guy can bench a ton with or without steroids. I'm sure he could bench a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I hope you know, it sucks for him that he seemingly didn't take the camp seriously. He dropped the fight. He looked out of shape. Now he's a free agent, and he just doesn't have the heat, man. You know, it's going to be difficult. The UFC can probably offer him, like you said, less money, which is the downside of that approach. But say if he won that fight, I think that was a gamble that was going to work out to his benefit. He was going to get a considerable raise.
Yeah, but, you know, this could be a situation where, you know, he's done the right thing and he's lobbied, he's gone out there and publicly lobbied to fight Fedor, and if that happens, then he looks like he's really smart.
Yeah, I like what he's doing. I mean, I think that's smart. If, you know, he wants to make a name for himself, call out the guy who some people say is the greatest fighter ever, you know, or at least was the greatest fighter of his era in the early 2000s.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, with that Rizin fighting show, they're not only doing one show on December 31st, they're doing two shows, one on December 29th, headlined by, get this, Shinya Aoki versus Kazushi Sakuraba.
And, 46-year-old Sakuraba.
Yes, 46-year-old Sakuraba, who has been in New Japan Pro Wrestling for the past few number of years. He physically doesn't look anything, you know, close to his physical prime, and I really doubt he is due to all the substantial beatings he got over the course of his career. But, you know, hey, at least they put him in there against a guy he's not going to smash his brains in, right?
Yeah, I think it's pretty telling. Sakuraba, he always wears a rash guard in New Japan, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's, and, you know, he did have that match against, it was against Henzo Gracie, right, and Metamoris. And, you know, positionally, I guess I would say Henzo Gracie won. But, you know, Sakuraba didn't look awful. But I've got to think in my heart of hearts that, you know, Shinya Aoki probably going to be able to lock him up in some sort of submission. And, you know, I'm just hoping that he doesn't take it home. You know, I'm hoping he has enough respect for the legend that was and is Kazushi Sakuraba. Unfortunately, he's kind of a shell of his former self, you know.
Yeah, I think you make a good point that it was fortunate that they booked him against somebody who is, you know, by all accounts, a very light striker. I mean, Aoki is very grappling-centric. I've heard our friend Dave Meltzer many times say that it's part of the Japanese culture to see their legends, you know, take these inhumane beatings. You know, have you, I know, like, there was, he fought some guy from, like, I don't know, like, Kazakhstan or Belarus. He got punched in the head, like, 50 times. Do you remember this fight in Dream?
I think that was Smirnovis.
Yeah, and the referee.
Well, okay, and he also.
He wouldn't stop it because part of their culture is their heroes get beat up and that puts them over more.
Yeah, he also, I think it was Zell Galasek as well. You know, beat him up a little bit, but Sakharov was actually able to win that fight. The people, if they have not been following mixed martial arts since the early 2000s and late 90s, they just don't get it when it comes to Sakuraba. This guy, he's a different breed. He was absolutely, absolutely, absolutely awesome. You know, and I would credit him with, you know, building up mixed martial arts to a point where it really, really interested me. And, you know, he was not one of the guys that got me into it, but definitely one of the guys that sustained my interest in the sport with his time in Pride. It was just something special, you know?
Yeah. And, here's a question, Tom. It's like, and I don't think there's a wrong answer here. In his prime, the Sakuraba fighting at his real weight, you know, if he was in America fighting at a real camp, I think he would have been a welterweight. Do you agree?
Yeah, probably, yep.
So him versus Matt Hughes, who wins?
Yeah. When? What year?
Well, take the before the hellacious beating from Vanderlei. I don't have the timeline on the top of my head. Take Matt Hughes at his prime and Sakuraba in his prime.
If we go, if it's 2001, if it's anywhere between, I'll say, 98 and 2002, I think Sakuraba wins. I mean, this guy was fighting heavyweights. He's fighting way out of his weight classes and beating them. You know, he submitted Quentin Jackson, which is phenomenal. It's unbelievable. He was beating Igor Rovchanchin in a tournament after he had just fought for 90 fucking minutes. And the only reason he lost is he was gassed. He won the first 10 minutes of that fight and then just threw in the towel in between, or I'm sorry, the 15 minutes of that fight. So this guy's a different breed. And he was just something to behold, you know.
You know, I have his record here. So, like, in that, let's just start, you know, let's start with March 25th, 2001. Okay, he gets killed by Vanderlei Silva, comes back, submits Rampage Jackson, then gets killed again by Vanderlei Silva.
No. He got his shoulder dislocated that fight, which up until that point, I think he was winning.
Which, okay, you're talking about the second Wanderlei Silva?
Second Wanderlei Silva fight. There was a point where Wanderlei Silva went for a slam, which never happens, and kind of spiked Sakuraba, who was, I believe he was going for a guillotine, spiked him on his shoulder and dislocated it. And I think Sakuraba kept fighting. It was like right at the end of the first round. Sure. Sakuraba kept fighting, and then they stopped it due to that. So.
And then the next fight was Krokop, also a doctor stoppage.
Well, he got his orbital broken, if I remember correctly.
That's the infamous picture that you always see with Sakuraba's eye looking like he's got a tennis ball under it. Yeah. You know, fast forward, and then he had a third match with a prime juiced up Wanderlei and got knocked out. Yeah. And then fought Little Nog.
He got beat up bad by Arona. I'm pretty sure he got beat up bad by Smirnovis, by Zelgalasic. He got knocked out by Melvin Manhoef. He got knocked out. No. So he lost by decision to Kiyoshi Tamura.
He beat what was the guy's Smirnovis? Is that how you say it?
He beat Smirnovis. Yep. Yeah. He also had that fight where Yoshihiro Akiyama kind of beat him up in the infamous match where Akiyama was greased, if you remember correctly.
Yeah. Didn't he fight also Mayhem Miller?
He was submitted by Mayhem Miller, which is a great segue.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. You know, I tweeted him. Ryan Loco is a great photographer and been around MMA forever. And he got into MMA because he was Mayhem's buddy. And he would just go to all the events up and down San Diego, Southern California. And he just told me, you know, I asked him, do you keep in touch with him? And he said, no, he's not the same guy. It's a different person. I just, you know, and yeah. He didn't really expand on it, but I kind of knew what he meant. But so the TMZ article is saying that the cops are saying that Miller was aggressive and uncooperative and unleashed a crazy attack at officers, throwing ceramic tile and threatening to attack with a fire extinguisher and a metal pole.
That, yeah, well, it's insane.
I mean, shit, this guy's got a death wish, because if you come after an officer, and I don't know much about law enforcement, but if I was if somebody and I had an inkling that this guy was a legit fighter, you know, for a while he was in the top 10 in the world. This guy's a badass, even though, you know, he's crazy and he's spiraling out of control. You come after me with a metal pole, I'm pulling my fucking gun. I'm not taking a metal pole across the fucking face. I mean, he's lucky they didn't pull a real gun. They just pulled a taser.
Yeah.
And I guess he don't give a fuck.
I'd be interested to know what kind of ceramic tile it was, too, because, you know, you could get it as low as 49 cents a square foot, or, I mean, it could be up, you know, you can get some really expensive stuff. So I wonder what he, you know, what he had on the floor. How the hell do you even get, like, was he ripping it off the floor? What, did he just have ceramic tile laying around? I mean,
yeah,
what's going on?
Apparently, you know, it's the same common thread all the time, a disturbance between him and a female. This has got to be, no exaggeration, the fourth or fifth time within the past 2 to 3 years that this has happened. I mean, remember the time he barricaded himself in the house?
Yeah.
And I have no idea. How does he continue to get out of jail time? They just decide that it's better for him to go to a psychiatrist?
I guess. I don't know.
but they said what made this happen was a disturbance involving two women.
Ooh. So was this like Lamar Odom style, or I mean, what's going on?
Oh yeah, there's another one we'll talk about a little bit later.
But will we?
if you want to, because it has an MMA tie-in.
That's right, it does. Yeah, but I mean, just real quick on the Mayhem Miller thing, you know, that's the guy that submitted. He was the first person to submit Sakuraba. Sakuraba had never been submitted up until that point. And then, you know, he also holds a win over UFC welterweight champion Robbie Lawler. Wow. Submitted him by arm triangle choke. So, you know, this guy is legit. He was as legit as they got. And unfortunately, is he off the wagon? Is he on the wagon? I forget how it goes, but he's
off the wagon. And you know, just to add to that, he beat Tim Kennedy. You know, And that was at a time Tim was going back and forth to Iraq and Afghanistan. He wasn't training full time. But even Tim Kennedy, with, you know, not a full time fighter, is a fucking legit badass.
Yeah.
And also, not even that long ago, 2009, on that fight card when Fedor fought Brett Rogers, Mayhem fought Jake Shields, who nobody was beating Jake Shields. They had won like 20 fights in a row. And if he had maybe 3 more seconds in one of those rounds, he had him in a rear naked choke. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really close to squeezing the life out of him. So, you know, it's one of those situations where I don't think it's going to end well for Mayhem. I hope he turns it around. My only hope is, you know, if he decides to do something really stupid, that nobody else is harmed with his, with whatever action he decides to take.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. I was going to say, I hope for the best, but Jesus, I just hope, for something okay. I just don't hope for the worst, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, just to get back a little bit on Saki Kibara's new promotion, there's a couple things that I thought was interesting. They have Fuji TV. That's the channel that they got kicked off in 2006 because of the alleged involvement of the Yakuza in Pride. I say alleged because, you know, I don't want to have my throat slit anytime soon. But some other things that what's interesting about that is the UFC has tried to get on network television in Japan for many years and has failed. Saki Kibara made it happen, which which is interesting, you know.
Yeah, but you know that's like a completely different world. That is the one country. Maybe there's one other place I've been to, but I can't think of it off the top of my head, where I felt like, holy shit, I'm in a completely different planet, you know, and that was Japan. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things, and there's been a lot of turnover in that Asian office, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, I think there's a lot of cultural differences that, you know, restrict what the UFC is going to be able to do there as far as growing their brand. And I don't know that it's a market that's going to be as popular as the Brazil market or even the European market. And, you know, Australia is starting to pick up a little bit as well. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Japan just kind of gets put on the back burner.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if you also saw, Tom, you know, they're going to do an 8-man heavyweight tournament with the winner getting $500,000. And here's the weird thing. The first round of the tournament, it's an 8-man tournament, starts on the December 29th card.
Yep.
And then those guys got to come back and fight two more times on the 31st. Now, put yourself in that position. So you fight, and then you got to cool down. You go through all the things you go through after you fight. And then you got to get – mentally, you got to get hyped up again. Like, that's got to be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, I would rather do it, you know, all in that one night if I had my choice. But by far, you know, I'd much rather do it that way than have to fight two nights later. That just sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it makes much sense. I'm hoping that they'll change their mind on that. Do it all in one night. I mean, I don't know. It's possible that they need, you know, they don't have enough star power to do it all in one night. They need to do it over two shows.
I don't know. I can't imagine that they're going to be able to fill two shows top to bottom. You know, I think that they should have just gone with the one show. But hell, I'm not a businessman. I'm sure shit not Japanese. So
yeah.
Well, I don't think I am, right?
I mean, you don't look it. You could be.
No.
So it's going to be Pride rules. But are elbows allowed?
Not if it's Pride rules.
I don't know if it's going to be modified Pride rules. But I saw there that the round structure is a little bit different. It's going to be a 10-5-5 instead of just a 10-5. Do you think that'll drag out a little? I mean, we're talking 20-minute fights. I think that's a little too much.
Yeah, but what's going to happen is that 10-minute first round is going to eliminate a lot of guys in that first round, you know? There'll be more finishes because guys will be exceedingly tired once you get to that 5th and 6th minute. And, you know, I think that most fights won't go that full 20 minutes. I think most fights will end in that first round.
Yeah, I mean, I hopefully that's the case, you know, because I don't want to see a 20-minute fight. I mean, shit. But I know Dave Meltzer had reported that they're looking at adding a pro wrestler, and it not one of these pro wrestlers from a generation ago. It's going to be a younger pro wrestler. You know, I guess they're trying to find their new Sakuraba, but it's not going to be somebody from New Japan. They have a better relation. Maybe a guy that Inoki, one of Inoki's proteges, or
yeah, it could be that guy that, you know, had that strange attack on Mark Coleman in what was supposed to be a worked match that he kind of turned shoot. If you remember that guy, he was a former sumo. I think it was like I don't know. He's got some weird name, Shimizua or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Did he look like a legit fighter?
No. He's gotten crushed since then.
Yeah, it's going to be rough. I mean, how about a guy like Ibushi? If you put Ibushi in MMA, that guy, I mean, man, what an athlete.
Ibushi's too old, man. Ibushi's in his 30s.
Is he really? Well, how about Okada?
No way. You got to be out of your mind. You can't put Okada in a fight. No way. That's so stupid. That won't happen. Here's what's... I'm telling you, no one from New Japan's going there. It's just that's not going to happen. New Japan, I think they learned their lesson. Inoki's not in control at the top anymore. I'd hope and pray that they learn their lesson about putting wrestlers into shoot fights, because they did the same thing with Yuji Nagata and he got murdered. They had shoot fights on their shows. I don't know what the hell they were doing, you know, in the like the 2004, 2005 era. They were just. They had Fujita in there as a champion wrestling, you know, once a year. There was a lot of weird shit going on as far as shoot fighting goes, intertwined with New Japan. And hopefully they've learned their lesson, because their business does not rely whatsoever on, you know, the idea that these are, you know, shoot fights. It's not like a worked shoot promotion anymore. It's really, you know, kind of a more traditional pro wrestling style, I guess I would say, and I can't see them putting somebody into those fights. It'd be stupid. And Kota Ibushi's older than me, by the way. So,
how about Nakamura?
I don't think anyone from New Japan's going. No one. That's my final answer. Unless you know something I don't.
No, I don't. I'm trying to look up the sumo guy that you were talking about. He's 32. Shinichi, is that the guy?
Yeah, I believe so.
Let me see if that was the guy who's... Yeah, so he shot on... Wikipedia saying...
Shinichi Suzukawa. Or I guess it would be Suzukawa Shinichi!
Yeah, I mean, so this guy, that's not a, I don't think that's the right thing to do to Mark Coleman, to turn a worked match into a shoot. Especially, I mean, Coleman was an old man at that point. And so maybe this guy gets in the ring and somebody teach him a lesson. But he did beat...
Well, he's 2-3.
Minowa, man.
He got armbarred by Krokop. So that should tell you about his ground game right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of talked about it or foreshadowed it a little bit, but this whole Lamar Odom situation, and apparently he was discovered by a worker at this whorehouse named Richard Hunter, and I heard his friends call him Dick Hunter, but apparently he's involved in the MMA industry, and he does a...
If he was at that place, wouldn't he be more of a poon hunter?
I don't know. I don't know.
Now that I think about it, wasn't Lamar Odom found with a tranny?
Is that right? I haven't followed it that closely.
Yep. That is the word that it was. He had requested some sort of transgender, you know, some former or something, and that's who actually found him unconscious.
Just when you think this story couldn't get any worse. So this guy, Richard Hunter, has some kind of like radio show on an ESPN affiliate or something in Vegas that he does with Ricky Lundell, who's a coach to many, many fighters in town, and also Frank Mir.
Yeah, I was not aware that he was involved in that. I also know that he apparently rescued one of Michael Vick's dogs.
I saw that. Yeah. So, I mean, that's really an amazing feat, you know, between his MMA responsibilities, his whorehouse responsibilities, to put the interests of those dogs. It's quite commendable.
Good Samaritan.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought, I was like, this can't be real. I mean, an MMA media guy is the guy that found Lamar Odom at a fucking whorehouse. I'm like,
that's according to, was it Dennis Hoff? That's not who found him. The person that found him was this transgender, transsexual.
But didn't Hunter make the call?
That I do not know. But yeah, whatever. They were all there. They're all partying. They were all doing whatever nefarious drugs and boner pills. So. Who knows what was going on?
That type of stuff that we would know about. We don't utilize that type of stuff. But so that's the Lamar Odom MMA tie-in, you know. But Tom, October 24th, Dublin, Ireland, the UFC is holding a card, and I know that was a card that you wanted to be on originally. But it worked out a little bit different. But this is not looking like a great card because they lost a fight that I was really looking forward to, Stipe Miocic versus Ben Rothwell, which to me was like, well, shit, I don't know who's going to win. You can't predict these heavyweight fights.
So, no, and that was one that has title implications, you know, really does. And it's unfortunate that fight's off. And Rothwell, I guess he made it quite clear that he would have fought anybody to be on that show, but they pulled him off and sucks.
Yeah, I think the problem was nobody wants to fight Rothwell on like 2 weeks' notice. I mean, he hits pretty hard, and he's he beat Overeem. He beat Mitrione. Mitrione, right?
Yep.
And that's when he had that infamous promo with John Anik. In John Anik's defense, he's not a pro wrestling guy. I don't think he knew. Because it was one of those odd promos where like he did it and then like he had to like go back to being Ben Rothwell. And it would have been so much better if he would have just did his promo and then just walked out.
Yeah. Anik pulled him back in and made it awkward. Really awkward.
Yeah.
It was awesome when he had that great laugh. That.
Yeah. I mean, you know, though, I mean, I'm looking at this UFC Dublin card, and I'm really interested in Dustin Poirier and Joe Duffy, who defeated Conor McGregor 5 or 6 years ago by submission. And
what a nickname on that guy, too. Irish Joe Duffy.
Yeah, I'm sure it took him a long time to figure that out. But, you know, he actually trained for this fight in Montreal at TriStar.
Yes. And I did see some pictures, and he has a really hot girlfriend. So, I mean, if he met her there at TriStar, and now they got Sage Northcutt there, and they got GSP there, like – it's a really good-looking gym.
You know, I was – Montreal was – I mean, there were so many beautiful women in Montreal. It was unbelievable. I was there for the GSP versus Sarah rematch. I guess that was 08, something like that. You fought in Montreal too, right, against Carmel?
I fought there twice, and I have lost two times, and I still love that place. So
one of them was bullshit, though.
That is true.
Carmel, right?
Yeah. It's horseshit. That's why I'm trying to get back at France by dating one of their women now.
So the co-main, the new co-main is Patty Holahan versus Lewis Smolka.
I like that Patty Holahan guy. He's got a good gimmick. He's got that T gimmick going. And at least he's different, you know?
Yeah.
He looks stereotypically Irish as you could be. And he plays it up well. So, you know, I think pushing him up into that co-main event spot, not a bad idea. Unfortunately, that Stipe and Rothwell fight was it wasn't carrying the show, but I mean, realistically, it has it carried about as much weight as the main event.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
the thing, so
Holohan is listed at 5'10", 125.
No, I don't think he's 5'10". Come on. Really?
Oh, that, well, that's Wikipedia. Could, you know, who the hell knows about Wikipedia? But, I mean, the rest of this card, Norman Park versus Reza Madadi, Nick Dalby. He's actually a good prospect. I think he's from Denmark, versus Darren Till. And that's your main card. And then they have seven undercard fights. And I'm looking at it here. I see a few familiar names like Stevie Ray. Not Vaughn, unfortunately.
Is it Booker T's brother?
It could be. It could be. But it's saying lightweight. And Stevie Ray was he's pretty well put together. I don't think he's a lightweight. Neil Seary is on there. I've heard of him. Aisling Daly, heard of her. That Pendred guy who wants to fight CM Punk, he's on the card. Darren Elkins is on the card. He, let's see what his recent record is. He's coming off, he lost to Jeremy Stevens, beat Lucas Martins, and then lost to this guy, Diaz. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's going to be on during the afternoon if you're out west, and also in the afternoon if you're in the east. So, I don't know. The main event to me, I'll watch the main event. The rest of the card, you know, there'll be some college football on, so not really too interested in seeing anything other than Poirier and Duffy.
And baseball.
Yeah, baseball too. Mets. Yeah, Mets are my team. I've been a Met fan for over 25 years, and it's been very difficult to be a Met fan. A lot of frustration. I mean, I was too young to remember their run in 86 and 88. They got to the World Series in 2000. Bobby Valentine was the manager. They got to the NLCS in 2006, and then that was the last time they were ever in the playoffs until this year. So it's kind of a tough existence, you know, being a Met fan. You got, it's like, what do you call those people that like to harm themselves? Fatomasochists?
Yeah. Self-loathing.
It's one of those situations.
Yeah. Well, the Mets suck.
Yeah.
Go Blue Jays. I'm pulling for the Blue Jays.
So,
Rumble. Just because of John Olerud's helmet.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And I think the explanation why he wore that helmet was he had some kind of brain injury, and he needed,
he got hit by a ball, right?
Yeah, it was, and the doctors said, "Hey, you better wear this." You know, that's like a catching helmet that you would put on backwards and then put the mask on. But yeah, John Olerud was a hell of a hitter. He also was a great pitcher at the University of Washington. One of the very rare players to ever, you know, not play in the minor leagues. He was so good out of college that he went straight to the major leagues. But
kind of like my boy Ricky Vaughn.
Yeah, he went from the correctional league to the majors, to the major leagues. And you know that movie, Major League, you know, I guess it's what, like 25 years old at this point. And it still stands up, man. It's one of the greatest baseball. There's a lot of great baseball movies, but that one was a classic. And even the second one was really good.
Yeah, it was on television last night. So hey, I'm sure it's probably on every night.
Yeah, I mean, in this era of 800 channels, it's probably on a few of them here and there. But wanted to talk a little bit about Rumble Johnson had some comments about a guy you know pretty well, Ryan Bader. And the gist of it is basically Johnson called him out and said, "I know you won five in a row, but you haven't beat anybody of consequence," which is kind of throwing his boy Rashad under the bus.
Yeah.
And Bader is like, no, I've won five in a row. I need a title fight. You had your opportunity, UFC 187, and you threw a couple good punches, and then you decided, and then DC just imposed his will, and AJ basically quit. And you know, I know that's easy for me to say as a fan, but even his corner was yelling, like Henry Hoof was yelling at him, "Don't quit," which kind of tells you something that his coaches know something about his psyche, you know, and what's going through his mind when DC was, you know, putting a hurting on him.
Yeah. Well, DC said he needs a break, right?
He's in a walking boot. So, you know, this is a little bit, I don't know if it's breaking news or whatever, but they're not going to fight on that Super Bowl card. It's going to happen after that, Jones and Cormier.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately for Ryan Bader, he's going to be left out to dry again. And the Rumble fight is not I think for Ryan Bader, DC is a better matchup for him than Rumble is. I think – I don't know. I just think that Rumble's got so much power and, you know, he's so big that, you know, perhaps he'd be able to stuff Bader's shots. Maybe land a big punch. I could be wrong because Bader's stand-up that last fight against Rashad was much, much improved, I thought. And it seems like, you know, obviously he's won five in a row, so he's hit his stride. And before that, the one loss was the loss to Teixeira, where he had actually dropped Glover real early in the fight. And then, you know, unfortunately got, you know, caught in kind of a, not like a scramble, but, you know, he got caught in exchanging blows and defeated then. But, yeah, I don't know. I personally, I think Bader should get the title shot just because he's had five wins in a row. We'll see what happens with John Jones' return. Obviously, nothing has been set in stone yet, but if he comes back, you've got to think he's getting that first shot for sure. And, you know, I've heard people bring up a pretty good point that, you know, for DC to fight Ryan Bader, unless he destroys him, it's going to hurt him when it comes to this Jones rematch, you know? People are going to look at, even if Bader is much improved since he fought Jones, and I really think he has improved in a lot of aspects, especially when it comes to his stand-up. I mean, his stand-up, his footwork is a lot better, markedly improved, I think. I think unless DC went out there and crushed him, people would go like, oh, well, John Jones had no problem with this guy. Clearly, you know, he's already beaten DC, and there's nothing that makes me think otherwise. So, you know, I understand if it's DC, why you don't take that fight. I understand if you're Rumble, why you're trying to get that fight. And I understand if you're Ryan Bader, why you want that title shot. So it's just a log jam up at the top. And with John Jones, you know, imminently coming back, it's not going to cease to be too much of a log jam there. It's going to continue to be bunched up until something gets worked out.
These light heavyweight rankings, man, they pulled you out of the top 15. What kind of fucking horse shit is that?
Hey, I made it once. So I'm good. That's good.
Who are these bums? Like Corey Anderson, what has he done?
Well, Corey Anderson did lose to Jean Valente, and then he beat Jan Blachowicz.
So Jan Blachowicz is number 15 now.
Yeah, he was out. He dropped out of the rankings, and then he came back in and replaced me. So
how does that make any sense?
I don't know. And the other thing is Corey Anderson is on a one-fight win streak. The fight before that, he lost to Jean Valente, who I defeated. So I don't know.
I mean, look at this guy. Blachowicz is number 15 in the rankings. He's lost two in a row.
Yeah, and the last fight was like a 30-25 or something. But yeah, he was ranked pretty high. He was ranked like, you know, top 10, I think. Or, you know, close to it. Who cares? You know, Brian, I made it once. They got the rankings right like 2 or 3 weeks ago whenever I was in there. So whoever voted in those rankings, you're smart. Whoever took me out since then, you're a jerk off. If it's a guy who wanted me on his podcast and couldn't understand why I wouldn't go on the week of the fight when I've never talked to you before in my fucking life, screw you.
Is that anyone in particular?
Yeah, because he contacted you too, bro.
Oh, yeah, it is that guy.
And he didn't vote for me.
Really? He held that. Oh, so you were able to see his rankings? That you can see that?
somebody alerted me to this on the Wrestling Observer site. So.
Yeah, that guy was bugging the shit out of me, and I was like, "Hey, man, I don't know. I'm not Tom's handler. I mean, I talked to him, but I."
Here's the other thing, too, guys. Like, okay, if you're listening and you got a show out there, I got a lot of stuff going on, like in my life. I just had a kid. Do not ask me for an interview the week of the fight if I've never talked to you before. I don't understand what makes you think, unless the UFC sets it up, I don't understand on what planet you think I'm going to have to like take this time in the – it's the worst freaking week of my life. Every time I fight, I'm going to take time out of my schedule to talk to somebody I don't know who's been bugging me and doesn't understand, you know, that it's a trying situation when you're getting ready for a fight, okay? I got no problem coming on afterwards. I'm in a lot better mood after that fight week. But don't hound me right before it and then get mad if I don't come on your show.
And then bother me about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, like I could say, oh, Tom, you have to do it. No, that's not my role in this whole thing.
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah. Yeah, so I the reason I wanted to bring up that thing, I think Bader is the victim of really bad timing. You know, they're going to do DC and Jones. It's not going to be in February. It's going to be a little bit later. And you can't keep Bader on the shelf. So I think he's going to have to fight Rumble, which sucks because Rumble is really dangerous. And, I don't know. I don't know if there's other options for Bader.
He's got to wait and hope they give him a title shot, which, you know, at this point, you can't count on that. So maybe the best thing for him to do is just go out there and beat Rumble.
Yeah, which is really – it's quite risky. I'm trying to see Jimmy Manoa. What is he lost Anthony Johnson. Yeah, so that wouldn't make sense for him to fight Ryan Bader. So, yeah.
Bader Gustafson, I guess.
For Bader?
Yeah, Gustafson versus Bader.
Yeah, but hasn't Gustafson lost 3 of 4?
But he just lost a close fight for the title. Split decision for the title. I don't think that fight with DC hurt him in anyone's mind. So,
but yeah, I mean, it didn't. I mean, only enhanced him. And the one against Jones was also a great fight. But it's one of those things. If you have Gustafson beat Bader, then Gustafson's like, hey, I'm in line for another title shot.
Which is fine because I think people at this point would pay for it again.
Well, yeah, that's a good point because at least Gustafson does very exciting fights. You know, he's such a tough guy. It doesn't seem like he knows how to close. You know, there's guys who know how to win, do enough to win. I don't think he's not like
Kira Sedgwick.
Kira Sedgwick, there. I mean, there's a she is that the name of her show?
I believe so. I believe it's The Closer.
Is she married to Kevin Bacon? I haven't heard that name in like a decade.
Yeah, she's she's 1 degree away from Kevin Bacon, I believe.
Let's see if I remember that. If I am absolutely right, she's been married to Kevin Bacon since 1988. Kira Sedgwick. There's a fucking blast from the past.
Can always count on me for some random ass reference.
Yeah, she's 50 years old now, man.
She looks pretty good for 50, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, she knows. She knows. Yeah. So this Nick Diaz petition. So they're over, I don't know, how they got 106,000 signatures or whatever. I really hope that people understand that the White House has no influence on this whatsoever. And even though you get 100,000 signatures, there's a little caveat on the whitehouse.gov website that says they don't owe you an explanation even if you get over 100,000. So we might not get any kind of response. You know?
Yeah. I don't understand why everybody thinks there was going to be a response anyways. You know, from what I understand, you'd probably just be better off going to the Nevada state, you know, and finding out what avenues you can go to there in order to, you know, kind of leverage it against the Nevada Athletic Commission. You know, there's no – I know Cher apparently is a big Nick Diaz fan.
Yeah, I wonder who put her up to that. That was – it was so random.
Yeah, I mean, is she going to come out has she defended Joe Warren yet?
Yeah, but didn't he only get a 90-day suspension?
I don't know. I mean, poor guy. Clearly, apparently, he needs the weed. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, have you ever met Joe?
You know what? I have, and it was one time, and it was right before UFC 100. I was cutting weight in the sauna or the hotel spa, and he was there. And this is right when he had started in was it Dream? Yeah.
Yeah. Yamamoto, right?
He had just fought Kid Yamamoto and beat him. And I saw him there and I said, hey, you know, because my guess is at that time I was probably one of the few guys who was really paying attention to even the Japanese scene, you know, as far as like, you know, young UFC guys go. And I said, like, hey, you know, just want to let you know I'm a big fan. And he looks at me, he goes, I'm a big fan of yours too. And then runs off.
Yeah, that's totally Joe Warren. Yeah. Like he's one of these guys that I think legitimately needs green medicine, not to relax, just to function. Like, Joe is a million miles an hour, whether he knows you or he doesn't know you. That's just his mind just is going at this breakneck pace. I think the guy needs it.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, he can smoke it all he wants. He's suspended now, so.
Yeah. So, I mean, this – and like you said, I mean, the people that perpetrated this crime on Nick Diaz – are the commissioners of the Nevada Athletic Commission.
Okay, but perpetrated this crime in a way, yes, but Nick Diaz failed these tests, okay? People just want to, like, brush that by the wayside. Now, I guess the big issue is that these tests are kind of inconclusive and there's a lot of bullshit surrounding them. But, I mean, this guy's failed multiple tests. So, I mean, you have to put some of the blame on him. Obviously not a 5-year suspension, because that's, you know, not even in their own bylaws. But, you know, like, you can't absolve him of any fault in this situation.
Oh, I totally agree, because I even had somebody.
But a lot of people do that. A lot of people will do that, you know?
Well, if people are totally absolving him, then they don't know what rules are. But the point that I was trying to make, you know, I had somebody tell me that Quest Diagnostics for Drugs of Abuse, Quest, the way they test is actually very good. Now, the WADA-approved lab, Smyrtle, that's for performance-enhancing drugs, not for drugs of abuse. So there's actually a logical explanation of why Quest picked up on the drug of abuse, if you know, that's what it's categorized as. I'm not saying that it is. Whereas it didn't show any cannabinoids metabolites on the WADA lab, but on the Quest one it did. It, you know, and it was 300, and the limit's 150, yeah. Which leads you to believe that, you know, he was smoking maybe a couple days before the fight.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I've tried to understand all those. All those rules when it comes to the medical marijuana thing. And I don't get – I mean, there's so many different things, so many different factors that play into it, depending on your body type, your body fat percentage, what you're eating and drinking, and the rate you're sweating, what you're pissing out. Then when you're sweating, the metabolites actually increase because they're being released into the body. And I mean, there's so many things, so many moving parts in there that I really – don't understand it, but he was 2 times over the limit, apparently.
Yeah,
so, you know, it had to be that week of, I guess. I mean,
and it's his third,
that, you know,
it's his third offense. I mean, you know, I think people are 5 years is too much, but it's his third offense. You know, I mean, they went against their own bylaws, and I don't even think those bylaws that they put into place, I think they verbally did. I don't think it was officially set that, like, a 3-year suspension. You know, I don't know the legal details of it, but I think they sentenced him to something that was above and beyond the most severe penalty that they had advocated just months prior.
Correct. That is correct. So I think 2 years longer than
yeah. So to me that would be the crime. But I mean, let's be totally serious here. Nick, whether it's 3 years or 5 years, it's a bad situation all around. And the guy is, you know, unless he's willing to go to Japan, and here's the issue, and you know, here's one of the things that that Chael shared with me when he was going through his thing. You know, he failed a whole litany of tests, so he was actually on the hook for $250,000 fine per substance, and he got popped for five. So he's looking at, if my math is right, $1.25 million.
Yeah.
Okay? And I said, and my first thought was, well, fuck him. Don't pay him. And he said, no, Brian, you don't understand. It's the attorney general. They will put a lien on the homes I own. Anything that I have of value, they will put a lien on. We're not talking about some sanctioning body that has no authority. That's the attorney general of a state in the United States. So I don't know what the attorney general could do if Diaz was able to negotiate a release from the UFC, go fight in Japan. Would they, like, say he owns a home? Would they be able to put a lien on his home?
I don't know. I wouldn't pay that fine. That's ridiculous. I mean, what for? What? Honestly, for what?
Yeah, for smoking pot, $170,000.
Or listen, even in the case of Chael, right? You're gonna pay $1 million for like it, I don't know. That's ridiculous.
I think he was gonna sign everything over.
You're gonna ruin someone's entire life over you know, something that they did in a sporting contest. Like, they didn't kill anyone. Now, if Chael had been juiced out of his mind and injured somebody seriously, well, that's one thing, okay? Then you could go, okay, there's a case to be made for that. Nothing like that happened. You can't levy a fine like that against somebody. You have effectively, not only in Nick Diaz's case, taken 5 years of his competitive life away, but now you're taking the rest of his life away. How the hell is he going to be able to pay that money, okay? That's just absolutely absurd.
Yeah, and I don't blame these guys. I know Henry Cejudo said that he won't fight in Nevada, and there was another person who came out that was pretty high profile. Did you see anything like that? It's totally escaping me.
No, because I really don't. I think eventually, you know, anybody that said that will probably just fight in Nevada.
Yeah, because you don't have a choice. The UFC's putting on, you know, five or six events a year in Nevada, and you know, when they give you a call. And if you don't have the clout of some of these high profile guys, you take the fight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that Diaz situation. And then, you know, another situation that's ongoing is with Wanderlei Silva, who is being sued by the UFC for comments that he made about fight fixing. And he has knowledge of the UFC fixing fights. Now, I don't believe that the UFC fixes fights. But shit, I mean, they covered up that fucking Vitor test with his testosterone was through the roof, Josh Groves. So I don't know what they're capable of, but it wouldn't make any sense to me to fix fights and jeopardize your casino empire and the biggest MMA promotion in the world. It wouldn't make sense to me. So, you know, he's up against that. Let me try to get some details here. Okay, so Wanderlei is going to be back. So basically, they went to the district after he got that lifetime ban. He went to a higher court, and that judge basically said the lifetime ban is not fair, and they said the punishment was arbitrary and capricious.
The other thing too here, Brian, is like, say Wanderlei wants to go fight in Japan. The laws don't hold up over there. If he just wants to go fight, can't he just go fight?
Well, he's under UFC contract, and they'll sue him. And I assume Wanderlei has quite a bit of property. Now, I don't know if he can go stash that in Brazil or sign it over to his wife.
But I don't think they win. I don't know that they win that lawsuit if they're taking away the guy's right to work and fight.
Yeah.
That's where it boils down to.
I think there's something to that, and that's actually how Brock Lesnar won his suit against WWE. That basically the judge was saying, I don't care what Brock signed.
Clauses do not hold up. It's been proven in court. It's just the fact that nobody in the UFC has really gone and, you know, challenged it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what would happen But these are two guys who are in position. Could you imagine if Vanderlei or Nick Diaz got this Emelianenko Fedor fight? They just said, screw it. I'm going over there. I'm fighting him anyways. Find me whatever the hell you guys want. Try to fight me in court over this no-compete clause. I mean, this would really – I mean, it would set things on its side. It would be a huge news story, and that show would be like 10 times bigger.
Oh, man. I'd mark out. So that, can you imagine a juiced-up Vanderlei against Fedor?
Yeah, or or high Nick Diaz.
Yeah. Oh, man. I hope they do it, but I guess they're trying to do it the right way, so to speak. I don't know. But, you know, the district court judge said that the penalty handed down to him, the lifetime ban, was arbitrary and capricious. So they're going – basically, that judge sent them back and said, you need to do the hearing again. Now, to me, that's weird because it's like, hey, you have to do a do-over. But it's the same fucking people deciding your fate.
Yeah, it's the same people. And, yeah, I don't know. A lot of people do not like that Nevada Athletic Commission. And based on some of the hearings, they seem like, you know, clearly they are they have their own agenda, you know.
Yeah, man, they have their backs up against the wall, and I guess I don't know, maybe they're feeling heat. They see all the articles and all the people on the internet, and they're like, we're going to show them how serious we are, and then they do it, you know, because they were such a laughingstock for so many years, giving out all these therapeutic use exemptions, and Now they're totally opposite, you know, they cut the testosterone exemptions, which was really unhealthy. That's something that you need to be staggered off if you've been doing it for years. I mean, that's not having the health of the combatants at the forefront. But you know, it's just a totally fucked up situation, and just another example of how when government gets involved in private industry, they typically fuck it up. You know,
who's this guy coming out of here? Is this Republican FRB?
I identify as a libertarian these days.
Okay. Yeah, completely agree. I don't trust the USADA. I don't trust any of the commissions. I don't trust anybody. DTA, baby, Stone Cold taught me well. I don't trust any of these people anymore because there's been too much shit going on. There's been too much crap floating around between failed drug tests and conflicting results, suspensions being levied that, you know, there's virtually no right for them to levy suspensions that heavily.
Well, you mentioned USADA, and how about this guy that the UFC hired, Jeff Nowitzki, who praises USADA like they're God, right? And this is the same organization that granted a retroactive therapeutic use exemption for Floyd Mayweather to use an IV. Floyd Mayweather doesn't cut weight. He walks around at like 153 and needs to get to 47. You don't need a fucking IV to lose 6 pounds. Just don't eat dinner.
Yeah. That entire thing, there's an article about Thomas Hauser, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, he's a boxing guy.
Yeah, that whole thing just really opened my eyes in a lot of ways to how that system is run. And much like in that instance, you know, it was Mayweather Promotions or Money Team or whatever it is that hired the USADA to do the testing for that show. Similar situation with the UFC. The UFC has – it's – USADA is not like a government agency. That's – I think people believe just because it has that USA – the USA in front of it that it is. It's private industry. You know, it's a private company.
Exactly.
That's hired by the UFC to conduct these tests. So, unfortunately, without it being a real, I mean, it's independent, but there's money on the line. So there's always going to be, you know, some strings that could be pulled. And, that was apparent with the Mayweather situation.
You know, Tom, I just got your text about the tranny, at the whorehouse, at the, brothel, wherever it was.
I believe it was I don't believe the correct term is whorehouse.
A brothel? Is that the
correct? Yes. And, oh, brothel.
You know, I mean, these doctors, man, this is really dangerous because if you were to ask me, did this female used to be a dude? I'd say no. I mean, I'm looking at, I'll post it on Twitter, but I'm like, I mean, if, when you looked at this person, did you say, oh, that used to be a dude? I could tell.
Yeah, I could tell.
How?
Oh, because I visited that establishment many times.
Oh, okay. So
I was familiar on a first name basis.
Okay, so you had some inside knowledge that I didn't have. These doctors are getting too good with that fucking gender reassignment stuff. You're tricking people. Just the last thing, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but it looks like the roster cuts. About 50 fighters, a website, MMA something in Sweden, was the first to report it.
MMA something. I think it's MMANYTT.SE.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, something like that.
And that is off the top of my head.
And I want to pull up Van Buren's Twitter and get his story out there. Matt Van Buren.
Dude, can somebody give me a medal or something for remembering the URL address to that website off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Really? Really, guys? Nobody should be able to do that. It's a random Swedish MMA website. I just know it randomly. Come on.
So here's what Matt says. I was scheduled to fight in the UFC in August. I had an injury that forced me to pull out. I was offered a fight January 2nd against my teammate. My coach asked me to turn it down, so I did. I just got released from the UFC after Dana White said they wanted me back. I don't get it. And so he's one of the, you know, the rumored 50 guys that are going to be released. What's your take on Matt's situation there?
Well, he's lost two in a row, and you know, you don't get a lot of favors when you've lost two in a row in the UFC. That's usually the cutting point. So, you know, I can see why if he's turning down these fights, they cut him. You know?
Yeah. I mean, if he was coming off one loss, you know, it's such a touchy situation with fighting teammates. And Joe Silva knows, he knows the guy who are teammates and stuff. And I think sometimes he'll offer it and say, well, if they take it, you know, he can fight again. And if he turns it down, then bam, there's the reason, the justification of why I release him from the promotional contract.
Yeah. I wonder who that would be. Who's his teammate that he would have been offered?
Well, I don't even know. I mean, it says that he trains out of South Florida. So I don't know, ATT guy, but aren't there like 100 ATT guys?
Yeah. In that case, could have been anybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those, you know, you don't like to hear about people losing their jobs because the UFC is the pinnacle of the sport, at least right now. But, you know, they have about 560 fighters under contract. And, you know, when I say only, I feel weird saying that, like they have 46 cards or something. They should have a lot less. And they should probably only have like 300 fighters under contract. But it's just a reality that they got to cut people.
Yeah. I mean, with so many guys, I'm not surprised at all. And another thing that I saw brought up that was pretty interesting regarding the whole situation is that in the lawsuit hearings between the group that's headed up by John Fitch and Nate Quarry and Kyle Kingsbury and those guys, one of the things that they cited was that they keep you under contract and then don't offer you fights. So this could perhaps be a way for the UFC to kind of, absolve them of that situation, I guess, or that idea by cutting down the number of fighters and, being able to offer more fights. And they could go, hey, look, you know, that's not the case, clearly, because we just cut all these guys.
Yeah, and I had heard from somebody, there's a lot of female fighters who are, you know, they don't want to come out and complain about not getting booked because they kind of, you know, they know that they're expendable, but, they're not even being offered fights. And there's windows to, you have to offer people fights within a certain window of time. But it's like, even if the UFC breaches the contract, are you going to march into Joe Silva's office or give him a call and say, hey, you breached the contract, he's going to say, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to fight or not? What are you going to do about it? You know, so it's one of those, you really don't have any, what are you going to do about it?
Hey, man, anybody who's trying to get into MMA, it's an entertainment industry, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to deal with shit like this.
Yeah, it's a tough way to make a living. But if you knock people out and you get $50,000 bonuses like you, it could be a good life.
Makes it a little easier. And I'm looking to grab another one of those bonuses November 7th. And I'll be kicking off the show that night on Fox Sports 1.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think that's the right guy. He's not going to try to hug you or anything. Maldonado likes to throw some leather.
Yep. Yeah, and apparently so do I, which I was not aware of until recently. But
well, you know, maybe you're getting that man strength now. You got power in your hands now. Before you were more considered a grappler, wrestler, submission guy. Now you're the
I think it's dad strength kicking in.
Yeah, dad strength. There you go. Yeah, starting to hit your prime at the move up a weight class, and still bring that knockout power with you. So, oh shit, you know, I said we were supposed to plug the DraftKings and our t-shirts, and I fucking forgot.
Well, you didn't, because it's on right now. So
yeah, but I wanted to do it at the beginning, so you know, there's a higher probability of people listening. Hey,
just add it in. Add it in later. Let's plug it right now, and then we'll add it in later at the beginning too.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, Jake could probably do that. But so we got this company, armbarapparel.com, and there's a filthy FRB store. It's two shirts, and then there's a store for Tom, and he's got a few shirts.
It would just I think I do as well.
Okay, so yeah, and one of them is the iconic Lawler Mania. That I think you had that one years ago with yeah. Tricosta, right?
Yeah, who never gave me any money, so.
Oh, really? Michelle.
Gave me $200 or something from him.
Oh, good.
So they can, they can eat shit.
Not a good situation. Yeah, I think, what's his name? The Zombie had a similar situation, and yeah. he actually sold a ton of shirts. So, yeah, you can buy the Filthy FRB Show shirt is on armbarapparel.com, $20. And then Tom's shirts, it's also on the same website. I think Tom is on the front of the website with the Four Horsewomen. They also have a store there. So you can check that out. And then also we're affiliate.
Yeah, and guys, hey, listen up. As an aside to that,
yeah.
Everybody that bitches and complains about the Reebok deal, like, this is your actual chance to make a difference when it comes to that stuff. Everybody bitched and complained and said, oh, I'm not going to pay for that. You know, I don't want to pay the $90. I'd rather just give the fighters the money. Well, then do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the opportunity. And, you know, I never wanted to be one of those people like asking people or have one of those like PayPal donation buttons. To me, it kind of seems so cheap. But what's that, Tom?
It's hokey.
Yeah, it's hokey. It's just not the way I operate, you know, in this business or in my life. I just not something I like to do. So if you're going to spend money because of this show, at least get something out of it. The t-shirt, it kind of looks – it's wearable. Put it that way. You know, it's not one of those WWE t-shirts that, you know, girls won't talk to you because you have it on. You know, they might actually ask you, hey, what is that?
It's ECW-esque.
Yeah, yeah. And on the back, you know, it's kind of pokes fun at our relative. It says well-deserved obscurity. So that's kind of a little joke. And Tom, what your shirts, you have the Lawler Mania one, and what else you got?
There's also just a filthy one up there. And soon I have another design that I previously had in the past, which is a Street Fighter type of design using all of the different characters that I've been at weigh-ins and fight walkouts in the past, but I got to figure out how to get that that file uploaded. So once I do that, then that shirt will be up there as well, and I'll have three shirts.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, even if you don't like me, because a lot of people don't like me, but if you like Tom, buy his shirt, because the way that this model is set up, I won't get into the details too much, but he gets a really nice cut of the proceeds, you know, whereas, you know, there's that other large international apparel provider that people have been talking about a lot of late. You don't get much at all. You get like almost nothing, but
I get less than I get.
Yeah. So, but on Armbar, on Armbar Apparel, you know, Tom gets a really nice cut, and he appreciates everybody that cheers for him. You know, I think I can speak for him on that.
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
I really like fans, actually. You know.
Yes, even the fan in Chicago that just randomly walked up to you and then you just hung out with them the whole fucking day.
Yeah, well, hey, I had nothing else to do. So,
all right.
some guy, just random guy in the street, just, hey, what are you? You're fighting? Are you a fighter this weekend? Yeah. Where are you going? I don't know. I'm just walking around looking for coffee. Do you mind if I follow you? Yeah, sure. Yeah. 3 hours later, sure as shit, you know.
Yeah.
Still this guy, so.
All right, so yeah, that's the Filthy FRB show for, well, we're recording. It's now October 17th here in the East, and I'll have to strategize with Jake if we want to put this out tomorrow or Monday morning, because people probably don't download podcasts too much on the weekend. I'll have to talk to them about it. So you know where to buy the t-shirts, and again, congratulations to Tom for and his girlfriend for welcoming Finn Lawler into the world, and I know it's been a busy time for you, Tom, so I'm really happy we were able to get together and do another edition of this very professional podcast.
Yeah, and even though it was a kind of a marathon edition, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, so it's been a big news past couple weeks when it comes to mixed martial arts, and I think a lot of this stuff needed to be touched on from our standpoint and our viewpoints, which are exceedingly important.
Very important, because you really never know what I'm going to say. I mean, I guess that's one of – if I want to say something positive about myself, I'm very unpredictable. I'm entertaining in that way, because you never really know what I'm going to say. So I keep people on their toes. All right. So that's the podcast for this week, and we'll see you guys later.